يقولون سلام سلام ولا هنا سلام.
You're listening to Middle East Analysis, a podcast series taking a close look at the Middle East, North Africa region.
Well, 'tis the season to be jolly, I would say, really, seeing as we're heading very quickly towards Advent. And I'll give you another reason to be jolly. That's basically because of the two people sitting in front of me, not one, but two. Now, usually for Middle East Analysis, we have our regular studio guest, Dr. Harry Hagopian, international lawyer, ecumenical and political commentator on the Middle East North Africa region, and of course, the bishop's consultant on that very region. But not only that, we're joined by Reverend Dr. Michel Jalak. I hope I've pronounced that correctly.
Right.
Father, you're the General Secretary of the Middle East Council of Churches, so a perfect person to have on our podcast. And I think, Harry, if you don't mind, I normally start with you. But Father, let's start by talking about the Middle East Council of Churches. What is it and why do we need it?
First of all, thank you, James, for receiving me. And it is a good opportunity to talk about this council. Well, the Middle East Council of Churches is a platform of all the churches. It was founded by the churches, by the church leaders. And this is because it was a need for the churches to talk together. It's true that we live in a small region, if you want, about the Middle East, but we are a lot of churches, and in a small countries we have many churches and communities, and often they don't know about each other, because everyone has his own structure. Every church has own structure and own issues and problems. So the Middle East Council of Churches is the unique platform where the churches are together, and they are united, and they do meetings from twice a year just to talk about their own churches and about the situation usually.
Now, I should say at this point that Father Jalak is actually Lebanese, Maronite, from Beirut. So you're based in Beirut at the moment.
Right. The headquarters of the Middle East Council of Churches is in Beirut also. And we have several local offices in Jordan, in Syria, in Cyprus. We used to have a big office in Cyprus, especially during the war in Lebanon, and we have in Egypt, and so on. This is why. But the headquarters is still in Beirut, and I am Catholic, Maronite Catholic, and I'm the General Secretary.
Now, we will talk a little bit about interreligious, interfaith relations in the region. Obviously, that's pivotal. But I want to talk about ecumenism, Christian relations to begin with. Christian churches, particularly in the Middle East, seem to be quite well defined. Is there really a need for the Middle East Council of Churches, do you think?
Oh, sure. There is a need of a council like MECC, like the Middle East Council of Churches. But the movement, the ecumenical movement, follows all the ecumenical movement in the world, in the church usually. So on the beginning, in the 60s and 70s, the ecumenical movement was so strong, was high, and the expectations were very, very high. So now on the church level, it's not like before. There is like a transformation, or maybe like a shift of ecumenism, and this is not only for the Christians in the Middle East, but the Christian of the churches in all over the world. But especially for the Christian in the Middle East, it is important to be together, to work together, to think together, and to talk with each other. This is the reason itself of the MECC.
Do you know, it's extremely rare that I manage to keep Dr. Harry Hagopian quiet for nearly 3.5 minutes. So I'm going to segue into you, Harry, by saying, well, you've got a link, of course, with the Middle East Council of Churches, because some 15, 16 years ago, you were an Associate General Secretary over there.
James, yes. First of all, I would also like you to welcome Father Michel to this platform. Today, it's a pleasure to have him in London as the guest of the Catholic Bishops' Conference of England and Wales and its International Affairs Department. We have had a lot of meetings yesterday with the chair of the department, Bishop Declan Lang, with a meeting of the Catholic Forum, which includes all the Catholic agencies that work together in England and Wales. And Father Michel and I both gave presentations on the Middle East, North Africa, as well as the MECC, which is an acronym everybody uses for the Middle East Council of Churches. We also had a meeting with Father Chris Thomas, the new General Secretary of the conference, and today is pretty much a media day, whereas tomorrow is a political day at the Foreign Office in Parliament, but equally importantly with the Orthodox bishops, the Armenian, Coptic and Syriac bishops in London. Now, why do I mention this? I mention this because Father Michel said that it is important to have the Middle East Council of Churches as a talking forum for people to come and share issues together, because each church has its own problems, has its own responsibilities. But it is also an attempt at its higher level to seek the unity amongst the churches. Now, that unity is something we all seek across the whole world. It is nothing unique to the Middle East or North Africa. It is all over the world. I mean, it is an instruction by our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ to try and be one. Now, the body of Christ is not one. It is divided into so many different pieces. And I said the Orthodox, and then I said it's a good entry point for me, because of course there was the great schism of 1054 between the Orthodox and the Catholic churches. And the interesting thing about that schism is that as we speak now, Pope Francis is getting ready to go to Turkey, to Istanbul, in order to meet His Holiness Patriarch Bartholomew I. And this is a wonderful, wonderful event, because I remember in the building of the Apostolic Nuncio in Jerusalem, which is on the Mount of Olives, where he resides and works, the Apostolic Nunciature has a picture, a structure, a brass structure of the original meeting that took place in 1964 between the then Ecumenical Patriarch, who is Greek Orthodox, Athenagoras, and the then Pope, who was Paul VI. And now, 50 years later, we have already seen, I'm sure our listeners know, of all the enormous strides that have been taken by the Catholic and Orthodox churches to draw back together. John Paul II used to say that Orthodox and Catholic Christianity are the two lungs of Christianity. Francis is doing a lot in terms of moving forward that mechanism. So in a sense, what the Middle East Council of Churches also strives to do is to make real, corporeal, palpable, a sentence, a phrase, which I find extremely interesting and very real: unity in diversity. Because if unity means uniformity, then forget it. I don't want it. Because I don't think that the Maronites, the Syriac Catholics, the Armenian Catholics, the Chaldeans, the Latin Rite Catholics, all the churches, they are willing to give up the richness of their own traditions and rituals for the sake of uniformity. That will never work. But unity in diversity means that you can keep your differences, but you can all draw together in terms of that oikoumene, that coming together, that works. That, to me, is the higher purpose that Father Michel was talking about. Get the churches together, because to do this, you need to bond. To bond, you need to talk together, to establish friendships. If you don't have those friendships, you don't have trust. If you don't have trust, then history always preys on your mind. Whereas what we're trying to do is overtake history, particularly today, with the political realities of the Middle East, North Africa. Christians need more than ever to speak with one voice rather than speak with such dissonance.
Well, I tell you what, let's bond. Let's find out more about each other on the back of that. Father Michel, Lebanese, as we said, living and working in Beirut. Now, I saw an interesting statistic about Lebanon, that apparently one in four people in Lebanon at the moment is a refugee, which is actually the world's, in sort of ratio terms, it's the, you know, the greatest ratio in the world. That's quite alarming, but I suppose it shows Lebanon as a place that takes people in and looks after them.
I think you have old numbers, because we are not anymore that one over four, but more and more, because almost half the population of Lebanon now are refugees between Syrian and Palestinians, if you want to consider all of them, and this is creating several social problems with the young people, with the work, and it's not easy even to feed these people, to teach these people in our schools, and can you imagine, for example, like electricity, water, all these basic things, and already Lebanon has his own problems. So now it came like the refugees, Syrian refugees, and the war in Syria came to be difficult also for Lebanon. We are going to manage as we can. We know that Syria at the time during 2006 has received many Lebanese people during the war. So now it is maybe time to receive them and to be as much as we can a good people to receive them, because they are in need now. But still the problems, the political problems, still difficult, and this is why we are going to face this, which is not still not easy.
You know what, James? Father Michel is being very gracious. I am more worried than he lets on, because if you think that roughly when you put the Syrian refugees and the old-time Palestinian refugees and the Iraqi refugees who are there waiting for their visas to go somewhere else, and if the ratio is 1 to 2, I know Lebanon, I love and I'm very fond of Lebanon. I worry about its infrastructure, its institutions. Father Michel was talking about water and electricity, which are always rare commodities in Lebanon. But I'm also worried about the rise in truancy and criminality that is beginning to show on the streets. And we're not talking about far-flung areas of that tiny country. We're talking about the capital, Beirut. You go into the western side of Beirut near Hamra or whatever, and you see those people around in the streets. Now, there is a sense of hospitality that the Lebanese are receiving those Syrians, but what worries me is that this is not only the responsibility of Lebanon, Jordan, and Turkey. This is the responsibility of the world. They didn't start the war. They shouldn't be expected to carry this whole burden. That is what worries me. I'll give you one example, and then you'll tell me that my 2 minutes are over. If you go and see the Syrian refugees near Arsal, which is a borderline town with Syria, you've got them in tents. Winter has already come into the Middle East. This year, remarkably, the heavens have opened and it doesn't stop raining. And these people are freezing in their tents. And this is only the beginning of winter. And the world has too many conflicts for its UN agencies to be able to only focus on those refugees across Lebanon, Jordan, and Turkey. So my thoughts go with every single Lebanese, and my thoughts go with every single refugee. They weren't meant to be there. And Father Michel also said about the tensions. Those tensions happen because the Syrian refugees themselves are politically divided between those who support the regime and those who support the rebels. And therefore, can you imagine transporting all those problems, piling them up on top of the problems that Lebanon has originally, and then expecting this country with its confessional structures to survive?
Now, we've looked over the last 3 years, Harry and I have been doing this podcast. We've spoken since Tunisia, really, haven't we? All the way through what was then called the Arab Spring. And we've talked about Syria a lot. We've talked about the difficulty for Christians in terms of whether they were sort of loosely supporting the Assad regime or whether they were not. And then, of course, we've had northern Iraq. We've had an exodus across the region. I suppose with Lebanon, probably obviously if we take out North Africa and Egypt, Lebanon must have the most Christians in one country in the Middle East, does it not?
Right.
But yet there's a bit of an exodus all through the region. So do you think, Father, that Christians feel vulnerable as a minority in most of these countries?
Well, let us say that Christians are part of the population of Lebanon and all of the world, of the Middle East, so in Syria. And they are influenced by what is happening around. So what is called like the Arab Spring, it affected also the Christians, only because they are numerically maybe less than the others, so it can affect more than them than others. But at the same time, we cannot deny that the Muslims also, many Muslims are affected by this war, and many moderator Muslims don't accept what is going and what is happening in the name of the religion of the Islam. So let me say something also about Lebanon. So about the proportion of the refugees, we have to imagine like all Mexico came at the time to United States. So this is the real proportion. So if we want to understand what is going on, this is the reality. So can we imagine? So in United States, which is a developed state and very very structured, and we can imagine the difficulties with the immigrants. So this is the reality in Lebanon at the same time.
That's painting a very vivid picture, I must say. Now I'm going to open this question to both of you. Harry, perhaps you want to start with this one. I'm going to put it as simply as this. In light of Islamic State, other militant Islamist groups, and the perception of or actual fear of Christians in these lands, can Christians and Muslims live side by side in these regions?
It's a very valid question, I think, James. First of all, might I say that I wouldn't call it the Islamic State because I wouldn't want to give it the merit of thinking that it is an Islamic State.
Fair
point. It pretends that it is a caliphate. I think it's very far from being one. Having said that, there are clearly issues that have come out at the moment in terms of relations between Christians and Muslims. Over the years, you referred at the opening moments of this podcast about my own tradition and my own work with the Middle East Council of Churches. Since those times when I was working with this ecumenical organization, we have been thinking and talking about Christian-Muslim dialogue. We've been talking about emigration of Christians from the region to the West or elsewhere. We've been talking about the concerns that Christians have. I think those concerns at the moment are more vivid. And they are more vivid because the element of trust between Christians and Muslims, some Christians and some Muslims, is much less at the moment than it was 10, 20 years ago. 10, 20 years ago, you would have Christian and Muslim neighbors, and they wouldn't really stop and say, you're Christian, I'm Muslim. Now, inherently, that is something at the back of everybody's minds. Why? Because certain elements, starting with the Christian fundamentalists in the West on the one hand, and the radical Islamists in the East on the other, they're both monopolizing, misusing religion for the sake of their own identity and their own purposes. This, to me, makes it even more relevant to have an ecumenical organization like the Middle East Council of Churches, because it is through the interreligious dialogue between the so-called moderate, the so-called well-meaning, the so-called pragmatic Christians and Muslims that you would be able to overcome those obstacles that we are facing, which is the further radicalization of society. And let me conclude my bit before Father Michel comments on it, James, by sort of saying that we as Christians in the Middle East, we are roughly, if you take the whole Middle East, where the two bulky Christian presences are in Lebanon and Egypt. If you put everything in together, let us say for the sake of argument that 10% of the Middle East is Christian overall. I think it's less, but let's say 10%. Christians are not a commodity that is expendable. I think Christians are doing a huge work in the Middle East, across the Middle East, be it in Lebanon, be it in Israel, Palestine, be it elsewhere, because they are reconcilers, they are bridge builders, they are people who make it easier. I always tell Muslims that Muslim society would be a much poorer society without Christians in it. This is as true of Lebanon as it is of Israel, Palestine, as it is of elsewhere. So in a sense, yes, the radicalization is much more palpable. It's worrying, but we should address it responsibly, not fanatically, like some agencies do for the purposes of their own fundraising or their own ethos.
Well, let's talk about some of that work, Father. In terms of your experience, either with the Middle East Council of Churches or before that, how involved have you been in those sort of crucial interreligious dialogues?
First, I fully agree with what Dr. Hakopian said, which is true. Our presence as Christians in the Middle East is a need. It's a must, not only for the Christians in the Middle East, but for the world, for the dialogue in the world, because in a globalization era, we cannot deny each other. We cannot consider the globalization through technology only, but through life. And we live there, and we are on the border. As Christians, we are on the border, and which is very important. And we are vital communities, not as many think that they are few. It's not a question of few or lot. It's not a question of numbers. It's not a question of, because we are thinking like this. It's a commercial thinking, but it's not a realistic thinking, and it's not going in a way that the Christian can handle. And it's a need not only for the world, but only for the Muslim world. They need us. I am, as General Secretary, I'm always contacted by Muslim leaders, and they ask for us to help them. They ask us to be with them. They ask the opinion and what the Christians think about certain issues. And we are working together. Recently, for example, we work together about several values. What is citizenship for us and for them? What is values? What is respect of other? And they are very, very involved in this, and we produced together a book for teaching, for education, for the schools, and for several classes to be in the hand of the teachers, and not only for teachers, but also for a sheikh who are who teach in the mosque, and for priests. So every single value, and we agreed together to divide this work in four books. And in each book, we have to face together through the Gospel, through the Old Testament, through the Quran. What does this mean? For example, pity, respect of the other, democracy. What does this mean? Citizenship, dignity of the person. And this is why they need us. We need them. We want to be together. And not only for us, but also for the world. Because, you know, the reality in Great Britain, in Europe, in United States, Muslims are everywhere, as Christians are everywhere. So we need to be together. We need to share together common values to be against fanatism or radicalism.
Well, that's good to hear about those practical teaching resources. Excellent. Now, Harry, I just want to ask you, particularly perhaps about Iraq and Syria. You know, used to have strong Christian communities. There has been an exodus. How do you feel about that?
I would say that, yes, of course, it pains me to realize how much those Christians have disappeared to some extent from the MENA region, particularly Iraq and Syria, as you say. Interestingly enough, I was with the primate of the Armenian Orthodox Church in Baghdad, Archbishop Avak Asadurian, only last week. And we were talking about the Armenian community, which is a community who has adopted Christianity since the year 301 AD. So we're not talking about somebody post-reform, we're talking about somebody way before Reformation. And he was telling me that there used to be about 800,000-900,000, roughly a million Christians in Iraq. Now, if we're lucky, there are something like 400,000 Christians in Iraq left. In Syria itself, there are many Christians in Aleppo, in Damascus, elsewhere, who have also had to either leave the country, become a refugee, or if they're lucky, find themselves a visa or a neighbor or a friend or a relative to sponsor them to go to the West. Or more seriously, and although we talk about 3 million refugees across the region, we do not mention the 9 million internally displaced persons, the IDPs, in Syria. Now, those also include many, many Christians. What does that give you? That paints a gloomy, grim picture of reality. But two things need to be stressed here, James. The first thing is, Christians are not living in a cocoon of their own, and they're the only ones who are being targeted. Everybody is feeling the pain of the convulsions of the region. And therefore, what the Christians are witnessing, Muslims are witnessing too. What Muslims are witnessing, Druze are witnessing too. What Druze are feeling, Kurds are feeling. Shia, Sunni, everybody is in the same boat. We look at it from our own prism, but that prism is much broader and much wider than what we think it is. That's the first thing to say. The second thing to say, of course there are Christians, numbers who have been reduced. It's not only post the Arab Spring, it goes way before the Arab Spring. Now, some people say it's because of Islam. I would challenge that statement. It is not only because of Islam. Islam does have its radicalism, does have its ideologues, but it is also a political reality. It is also an economic reality. Yesterday, in a Catholic Forum meeting that both Father Michel and I attended, somebody who is a Spanish guy talked about the fact that there used to be over 25% Christians in British-mandated Palestine during 1948 era. Now, he said, it's just 1-point-something%. I would not disagree with him, but the majority of the people who have left because of economic and political realities, not suddenly because of extremism. So a lot of those people who are living in South America, a lot of the people who are living in Australia, some of them have founded their homes and their families. They're not going to come back. Some of those people give the Middle East, North Africa region a chance to breathe, to settle down, to prosper, to have the kind of sustenance that you and I are more or less take for granted in the West, you might be surprised how many of those people would come back to their region. This is something that we also need to keep in mind. And this is where I sometimes lay the blame on us in the West, because we go in and we try to make changes and we try to introduce democracy and we try to talk about human rights. These are all values that, as an international lawyer, I uphold them. I have done part of my legal studies on those, and I would definitely say that they are important. But also, we have to put it in a cultural milieu, in a cultural context. And that cultural context differs from place to place. Now, this is not a justification for rampant violation of human rights, as happens across many places, including in the Middle East. I mean, the prisons are witness of what happens in parts of the Middle East. The torture, the suffering, all this is true. But we have to be careful how we support a region and how we play a politics in order to help the people of that region, not only the interests lying behind those people.
Yeah, some very good points there. And I think normally Dr. Hagopian gets the final word.
Yes,
but today, Father Michel, it's going to you. And we will finish, we'll conclude with prayer. I think that's very appropriate before we go into Advent. Yeah, let's look at some of the positives then. Let's get rid of the sort of realities as we see them from the West and get to the truth. What would you say is happening at the moment, certainly with the Middle East Council of Churches, that is positive and taking us in the right direction?
Well, we look positive. And it is important because during crisis, we can be together more and more, and we can appreciate what does this mean to be together, not only between Christians and Christians, but also between Christians and Muslims. This is why we are aware, more aware now, that every community, every church, every religion need the other religion, other community, and other church. So we have a lot of hope. we think positively, and we are going to face this this situation. This is surely by God and by His will.
And you know what, James, before Father Michel has his final word, let me butt in to remind you that I'm still here.
How could we forget? Come on.
Well, James, what I have often told you in the podcast that we have had, you and I, for me, faith is not only measured by numbers. It's not only the quantity. It's the quality of the witness that matters. The church started with a higgledy-piggledy bunch of few Christians who didn't have a clue what was happening to them and to their world, who probably didn't even understand anything about what Jesus was all about. And yet from that grew this huge, huge Christian reality across along other faiths. Therefore, for me, it's not only a question of numbers. I always remember one of my mentors in the church in Jerusalem is the Latin Rite Catholic Patriarch, now Patriarch Emeritus, Michel Sabah. He used to always tell me, Harry, quantity is good, quality is better.
Now, do you know what? I'm going to actually spring this on you, because although we had a little chat before we went on air, I reckon it would be quite nice to finish with the Lord's Prayer, not only in Aramaic, yes, listeners, Aramaic. I did say Aramaic.
Aramaic being the language of Jesus.
Exactly. And we're lucky because Father Michel will comfortably be able to do that for us.
You're loving this because I have been able to do this.
Do you know what, listeners? That's the thing. We found something that Dr. Hagopian can't do. So no, we won't delight in that. We will celebrate that, actually. So I tell you what we're going to do then. Before that, I'm going to say a very big thank you to Father Michel Jalak. Thank you ever so much, Father. General Secretary of the Middle East Council of Churches, thank you for being with us. Fascinating insight. Really, really enjoyed that. Dr. Harry Hagopian, I thank you again. Very, very good. A really interesting podcast today. And if
a
you
different wa- one.
Very much a different one. If you want more from the good doctor, Dr. Harry Hagopian, you can go to at Harry Hagopian on Twitter. At Catholic EW is our stream for the Catholic Church in England and Wales. Father, any web addresses that you'd like to give out?
Yes, mecc.org.
mecc.org for the Middle East Council of Churches online. And that just remains for us to finish in prayer with the Lord's Prayer in Jesus' Aramaic.
Sure. Abunit bashmayo net kadash shmoch tite malkutoch nehu sibionoch aikanut bashmayo of baro hablan lahmutsun konan yaumono washbuk lan haubain wahtohain aikanu dofhnan shbakn el hayobain ulo talan el nesiono elo fasomen bisho metu diloch hi malkuto hay lo tishbohtol olam olmin amin.
Amen.